Hello and welcome to the Total Saints podcast. I'm Martin Stark and I'm joined once again by our panel of Saints experts to reflect on all things Southampton Football Club. Coming up on the podcast this week, reaction to another defeat at Arsenal, and we'll preview a busy week in the league with two games to look forward to, albeit nervously perhaps, Palace on Wednesday and Brentford at the weekend. First of all, let me introduce you to our regular TSP guests. Let's go top right, Steve Grant, who is the owner of Saints Web. What live games have you seen this week, Steve? You've been out and about again?
Yeah, so been on the road with Sutton this week. So a return trip to Newport on Tuesday night. Yeah, not quite the same resounding result as when I went with Saints earlier in the season. Last minute penalty defeat, having played with 10 men for an hour. And only about a couple of hours or so got back from weekender in Bradford.
I have to say, it's reassuring to have you back and moaning about the trains again. I feel like I've missed you've been in Dubai.
So the train home was delayed by almost 2 hours en route as well. So it wasn't as if we could pitch up in a pub somewhere and wait for everything to clear up. We were kind of about a third of the way home and, yeah, points failure and basically sat there doing nothing for
it's
ages.
Great to be back, isn't it? It's great to be back.
Yeah. Good old network row.
If you're watching the stream, bottom right is Glenn Delacour, who's the writer of the blog League One Minus 10. How's your weekend been, Glenn? I think your son's team didn't have a great result either today, did they?
No, they got beat. It was only a friendly though, so write that one off. Draw the line under it, move on. under-18s football. It's when alcohol gets involved. And you see players turning up with hangovers for a 10 o'clock in the morning kickoff. So that's an issue.
I remember the days.
We've all been there. Yeah, so we're in the year where they're sort of like turning 18 as the year goes on. And so suddenly it's legal to go drinking. And it's quite funny. And my son misses out because his birthday ends in August. So he's got wages. But lost this morning. But the major triumph of the weekend is that I now have a new boiler and
sat there in his shirt sleeves.
Hence, I'm sat there in a shirt and not in a hat and coat like I was all the way through last week. So swings and roundabouts.
Good. The other face joining us, the other voice top left, is Dan Sheldon, the Athletic's dedicated Saints reporter. Have you got over the Formula One yet, Dan? That was quite the afternoon.
Yeah, it was. I think I woke up this morning and was out of bed at about 8 a.m. and I was just anxious. And I'm not an anxious person. I don't ever feel nervous, but yeah, on the way home last night on the train on the way back from London, all I was thinking about was Formula One. Woke up this morning like the start. It's gonna be what's Max gonna do? What's Max gonna do? Then Lewis gets to jump, and yeah, it was good. And then you get the chaos at the end. And then I mean, I think had the result not come through, I probably would still be sat on my sofa right now watching TV, and you guys would be doing this on your own. So no, yeah, good. I can't say I'm happy with the outcome, but.
But at least they've had an outcome and you're with us, so that's good.
Yes,
so we'll take that. Of course, the biggest hello and thank you, as always, is reserved to our patrons wherever you're listening or watching us this week. Welcome to episode 179 of the Total Saints podcast.
This is the Total Saints podcast with Martin Stark, Steve Grant, Glenn Delacour and The Athletic's Dan Sheldon.
Now, Arsenal were unbeaten at home against Southampton in 26 matches. We can now make that 27. So leaving the Emirates empty-handed is nothing new. But what did you make of the game yesterday, Steve?
Disappointing, but kind of as expected, I think. We started well. We were the guys making the run in the early part of the game. The home crowd seemed to be getting very anxious. And then all of a sudden, it looks like we're actually going to force a sort of turnover of possession, like really high up the pitch. But Arsenal just sneaked their way out. And kind of as a direct result of that, we've got far too many players the wrong side of the ball. And they've got a lot of space to run into. They counter up our end. And I mean, it's not a good goal to concede. Arsenal have worked it well from the position they're in. And it's a good finish by Lacazette, who, I mean, his record against us is starting to get slightly annoying. But yeah, from our position, we've not defended it well. We've kind of almost got there at the attacking end. But then once they've kind of broken that initial press, we've got to do a lot better. Nobody has covered the hole that Kyle Walker-Peters has left when he goes to press on the left flank. And then, I mean, Lacazette has got a lot of space when he hits that shot from, what, kind of around the penalty spot. So your two centre halves, you're looking and asking questions, who should be in that position? Maybe Diallo and or Ward-Prowse should have been slightly closer to our goal by that point as well.
Ward-Prowse was trying to fill in at left back, wasn't he? He was the one who sort of got back behind Walker-Peters. But yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that in that situation, you almost want a defender to come out. You kind of take the defence as a block and everybody shifts across. So I think you almost want the left-sided centre-half to then become, you kind of then filter into a defensive three rather than just leaving a hole and pretending you're a back four at that point, because we weren't, because Walker-Peters was 40 yards up the field. You need to kind of be a bit pragmatic and play the situation, and we just didn't do that. We're not very good at adapting and sort of thinking about the game sort of out loud, if you like.
I'll apologise if my broadband is playing up, by the way. You may need to talk amongst yourselves for a bit. But Glenn, I'm conscious that people will be listening to this on Monday morning, be going for a run, they'll be walking, they'll be heading into work. So I feel like we need to try and start with some sort of positives. We talked about the 20 minutes because that seemed to go okay, and there was lots to be pleased with there.
Ralph's copped a lot of flack, again, mainly because we've lost and we didn't do much for the last 70 minutes. But he sent the team out quite well set up, and for 20 minutes we gave Arsenal problems and we looked okay. It's interesting because I've been thinking, I mean, Steve will remember this, when Sven-Göran Eriksson was the England manager, he always used to send a team, like he'd had 2 weeks to prepare for a game or whatever, and he'd send the team out and we were rubbish in the first half, and then he'd change it and the second half would be much better. So Ralph kind of seems to, in the main, get it right during the week. It's the in-game stuff that we seem to struggle with. But the first 20 minutes, we put them under pressure, and as Steve said, we kind of quietened the crowd down a little bit, and then they started getting a little bit anxious about things. But the bottom line is, we were on top for 20 minutes. We didn't really threaten the goal. We had the one shot, I think, from Armstrong that Ramsdale saved, and that was probably his only sort of decent save. I mean, Ramsdale's got this thing where he makes every single save look like a worldie, because he's arms everywhere, and he, you know, even ones that are straight at him, he flicks them over the bar and makes it all look spectacular. So yeah, the first 20 minutes were okay without really looking like scoring, but once, you know, the first goal went in with Arsenal's first attack, basically. I mean, it's ball watching horribly by the centre halves, and then the second goal was ball watching again. And once, I think Dan tweeted straight after the second goal went in, it's game over, and it was completely over. And it was one of those games where I quite pride myself on never leaving early and never giving up on a game early, but after an hour, I was done with it. Once the third goal went in, it was just rubbish. And I caught up on Match of the Day and saw that they'd hit the post twice as well.
Yeah.
it could well have been worse. And we'd had another couple of sort of dribbly efforts that weren't really threatening the goal. One shot from Redmond, which was half decent, which Ramsdale put over the bar. But overall, it was, after 20 minutes, it's a bad day at the office. And you can talk about positives, but it's no good having positives for 20 minutes.
Yeah, we got punished for failing to build on a bright start. So you must be sick of writing that, Dan, really, because it seems every week now.
Yeah, it's just like deja vu coming in. Certainly on a Sunday night, we're talking about the same problems over and over again. I was actually talking to my colleague at The Athletic at the Emirates, James McNicholas, our Arsenal writer, and he was really impressed by how Southampton started. And I was like, just wait, like, just watch, don't worry, it's fine. You know, they're going to get chances and they won't score, and Arsenal will. And he was sort of saying how the teams that Arsenal have struggled against this year are generally ones that let them have the ball. But he thought the way Southampton play on the front foot would actually suit Arsenal, because they don't have to think too much. It's kind of right, play around the press quick, and then bang, you're in like a, you know, a 4v3 or a 5v4 situation, and you just kind of overload the box. And he was kind of proven to be right on that. But yeah, I mean, they missed good chances, but they weren't kind of spectacular chances. There weren't anywhere you thought, how has he missed that? And, you know, Lacazette's a £50 million striker. Mm. And with all you know, the greatest respect to Adam Armstrong. He's a £15 million striker in his first year in the Premier League, and Brozier's on loan from Chelsea. So, you know, that's kind of the difference, really. Lacazette gets a chance, scores. But the defending was probably more of an issue, I think, for that first goal than Ramsdale making a save down to his right to stop Armstrong scoring.
Yeah. I have to say, Dan, before we go on, congratulations on breaking the Willy Caballero story last week and managing to get the fill the hole line in. I thought that was really good. Was it Sunday? We were talking about it on the pod, weren't we? Steve kind of called it and said that might be the guy we bring in, and then you pretty much confirmed it straight afterwards. So what did you make of the keeper, Steve? I mean, it's a tough game to come in, but did he look a bit rusty?
A little bit, but then, I mean, when was the last game he played? I can't remember if he played any of the sort of back end of the season games for Chelsea last season.
If you didn't, then we won't.
No, I mean, it's
AFC Wimbledon he's been training.
He's been training there, but obviously not played any games.
Yeah.
And I mean, there is no substitute for playing actual competitive football and keeping your concentration levels high at that stage. I mean, I think realistically, nothing he could do about the first two. Third one, it's one that a keeper always looks bad with when he's out jumped, or he kind of tentatively comes for a cross, doesn't get there, and the attacker gets there just before him. But I mean, he's not helped by the defence for that one. I don't understand how Caballero is stood there on his like a yard off his line or so, and there is I'm not sure who it is, but there's an Arsenal player alongside him, kind of being a pain and getting in his way.
Yeah, it's like
there's no defender there. Giving him some support. Surely there should be somebody. I mean, to be honest, in that situation, you probably want your shortest player in that situation, just being aggravating him, really, making sure that if Lacazette, if that was who it was, making sure that Lacazette can't put the keeper off, give the keeper the space to run into, so that if he does want to come for the cross, he's got a free run at it. Whereas what happened was Lacazette blocked him slightly. It was a little bit of a maybe grab of the arm, which I think a really picky ref might have given the free kick for. I mean, it's probably not a foul, but you've certainly seen them given. But because we didn't have a player there, he was able to do as he pleased. And yeah, that kind of capped off a pretty ropey 5 minutes or so from set pieces, given that he'd obviously had a goal from a corner ruled out for offside only, what, 2 minutes before?
Yeah, the warning signs were there, weren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's frustrating, because I think set pieces generally we've largely defended okay, I think, over the course of the season, but that wasn't a good one. And that it kind of comes back to the questions that I think Glenn and I both mentioned on Twitter at some point yesterday, was that Bednarek and Stevens as a partnership just doesn't seem to work.
No.
I mean, that was the partnership that started the Leicester game, that 9-0. And they got broken up immediately after that, and that was for a good reason.
Yeah.
it seems as if the problem is, I think you need, particularly a side of our level, you need at least one defender who is a dominant defender. And for whatever reason, Bednarek is not that dominant defender now, and arguably never was, but certainly has been more dominant in previous years, just isn't quite at it at the moment. And Jack Stevens has never been a dominant defender. He's always the read the game and also kind of sort of deal with situations as and when they come. He's kind of an organizer of other people, but not necessarily of himself. So I think the selection of the two centre backs, if I'm going to criticize anything of the team selection, that would be the one thing. I think
Glenn, you said the same as well, didn't you, Glenn? You know, Lianco was really unlucky, I think, to find himself on the bench yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of things that were out of Ralph's control yesterday. But if you look at the players who weren't available for varying reasons, Salisu, Romeu, that's two of our, if you like, tough guys. You know, that's two of our imposing guys who don't take a backward step, who attack the ball. I used a word on Twitter that I can't use here. you know, let's just call them dogs. You know, they're two sort of dog players who gets stuck in. Che Adams is, to a slightly lesser degree as well. He's missing. Lianco was missing. Now, Lianco was just left out. I don't understand that. We had a team of like nice young footballers, and I don't know if you saw Gary Neville was on the TV a while ago, and he was talking about another team, and he said, you know, they got lots of young players and the experienced players don't step up and guide them through the game in the difficult moments. And he was actually talking about Arsenal last week when they played Everton. And that is exactly what we were like yesterday. Our experienced players, who you think about it, yesterday they were Ward-Prowse, Redmond, and the two centre-halves. Forget Caballero for a second because it's his first game. Those four were nowhere, really. And they didn't help. And Diallo barely touched the ball. He just looked lost. Brozier had one of those games where he didn't look interested, whether that's just his language sort of style or what, I don't know. And there was a number of players out there who've got a lot to gain, you know, because no one is really playing well enough to have to be undroppable. You know, I'm looking at Elianusi, didn't do much when he came on, and he had sort of 55 minutes. There was a number of players out there who really could have laid down a marker to stay in the team regularly and just didn't do it. It was a horrible sort of game. But yeah, going back to the there were lots of things that couldn't be helped because of the players that were injured or suspended. But yeah, I didn't understand Lianco being left out, and I thought the two centre halves were really, really poor. They're just passive. They were just sort of, the second goal is horrible because they're just leaving it to each other. It's like, I hope my centre half partner deals with this, and that. You know, they're both there watching each other when Odegaard comes in unmarked. You know, he's been lost by a midfielder, and the centre halves are looking at each other whilst he has a free header from 6 yards. It was just awful.
But I mean, you can see from Odegaard's celebration, he can't believe his luck. A kid like him, who's what, 5'9", gets a free header 6 yards out in a Premier League penalty area. It's ridiculous. Mm.
Yeah,
and Dan, there was that heated debate between Bednarek and Hasenhüttl on the touchline. Did you see much of that? Did he say much more about that afterwards?
No, I didn't see much of it during the game. After the game, Ralph kind of intimated that Bednarek was kind of miles out from position for the first goal, and that, you know, he should have been there dealing with the finish. So I guess if it was Alex's turn last week, it was Bednarek's turn this week to get a gentle nudge underneath the bus. But I think I agree with both Glenn and Steve, to be honest. It was definitely a good game for Salisu. You know, if anything, his stock went up. I think, for me, Bednarek's been kind of like miles off it for quite a while now. I just don't think he's been anywhere near the races for a good kind of 12 to 18 months, actually, I would say. If you go back to the start of the season, he was the one, if I remember correctly, that was on the bench.
Yep.
And it was Jack and Salisu. And the guys mentioned that, you know, you need a dominant one and a talker. Well, I think Jack and Salisu complement each other because Salisu is the dominant defender and Jack is very good at talking Salisu through the game, if that makes sense. That was always noticeable, I thought, at the start of the season, that Jack was very good.
Yeah.
As Steve said, he reads the game and he is a communicator, and he had Salisu there, who is kind of the battering ram and the better defender of the two, but they complement each other well. Whereas Bednarek and Stevens, you know, you just put blindfolds on them. They just don't seem to have that same relationship, or they just can't play together in the way that Salisu and Jack can. So it'll be really interesting going into the Palace game what Ralph does with Bednarek, and whether now Jack is back, he thinks, right, okay, I'll pair these two up again. Because I think even at that City game, going into the game where you think, okay, they could lose 4 or 5 here, he still went with Jack and Sally rather than bring Bednarek back in. So yeah, I think it was definitely a good game for Salisu, and probably a good game for Romelu, and a good game for Adams, if you're being honest. Yeah.
The two centre-halves actually remind me of when we tried, for about half a season, we tried Jack Stevens and Maya Yoshida, and it was very, very similar. You had two defenders who were both, you know, both the passive types. Neither of them was a dominant centre-half. I mean, Yoshida, whenever he played against someone with any physical presence, he just fell to pieces. So and Stevens was the same. And I still have nightmares about that League Cup final when those two were playing against Ibrahimovic. It was just horrible. Yeah. So yeah, it kind of I was put in mind of that during the game, watching the two of them sort of like looking around for where Lacazette was, and he was 20 yards away. It just reminded me of that.
It is interesting, though, that last week Ralph called out Alex McCarthy, this week Jan Bednarek. Do you think that's his way of saying, you know, I've set the team up, I've done all I can, it's over to you guys now? And is that going to be, could that be more problematic, do you think, Glenn? Or do you think he's right to do that? Because we all agree with him and what he's had to say.
I think it's kind of overestimated sometimes how much a manager can actually do once the game starts. and that this is the way I've been thinking a little bit recently. Yes, Ralph isn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, and he does get outwitted by other managers when they change things, and he doesn't do things quickly enough. But in the main, we set up reasonably, and we start most games well. You can change certain things, but you know, as we said against Brighton, it's not his fault if Ward-Prowse plays a suicidal ball across the defence. It's not his fault if Adam Armstrong has every shot blocked. It's not his fault that on the first goal yesterday, our two centre-backs ran back to the six-yard line and left the striker completely unmarked. So I understand his frustration. You can argue whether you should throw players under the bus publicly. He hasn't really done it.
No, this is a new thing this season, isn't
I was,
it?
Really? I was interested that he basically apologised, I think, for the McCarthy thing, where he said he was a bit out of order, basically. And it's not quite been as blatant this time. He's calling out of Bednarek. I must admit, I didn't see the thing that Steve was referring to with if there was a sort of touchline confrontation. But I personally don't see too much of a problem. I mean, the professional sportsmen playing at elite level. At the end of the day, it's not all, it's not always going to be going well, and you shouldn't expect an easy ride all the time. I mean, sorry if I hurt your feelings, but you should be able to take a little bit of that, and pointing out a bit of bad play, I personally don't have a problem with it. But I do understand that, a lot of people do and feel like you can't criticise people publicly.
Do you think you should have called a few more out, Dan?
To be honest, you probably can't compare the Bednarek one and the McCarthy one. I think they're, in terms of calling someone out, they're two completely different things. I think after the Brighton game, he went a lot further with Alex.
Yeah.
He said he questioned his professionalism, and which for a footballer, that's quite a big deal, I think. Yeah. After Arsenal, he just pointed out that Bednarek wasn't where he should have been, basically, which I don't really have a problem with.
Well, I mean, they scored. So yeah. Obviously.
Yeah. Whereas the McCarthy one, I think he took it too far. And I think Ralph knew he took it too far, because in his following interviews, he didn't repeat what he said to us. Hmm. And then he was quite quick on Thursday ahead of the Arsenal game to kind of row back on that and actually say, do you know what? Heat at the moment, I hadn't really seen anything. I was just furious, and I shouldn't have said it, and I would act differently now. So yeah, I think he did the right thing by saying that about Alex, and I have no problems with him pointing out Bednarek's mistake at the weekend, because I think he did it in a fair way. It wasn't like he cost us 3 points. He's the most unprofessional player I've ever seen. It's disgraceful. It was, a bit calm, measured, and just Bednarek should have been there. He wasn't, and that's what happens.
Fair assessment of the game. Steve, any positives going forward? It was a tough afternoon for the forwards. I'm thinking Teller and Redmond, a few chances. Maybe the penalty appeal as well. There was a foul on Teller, wasn't there, at one point, I thought?
I mean, given some of the decisions that have gone the way of the big clubs this weekend, I don't think it's that bad a shout. But, I mean, on the balance of things, I've no particular issue with it not being given. But, yeah, it's one of those games where I think it's easy to overanalyze and sort of get worked up about certain things, which many people will do, because that's life these days, that people will want to basically find fault. And there's kind of, it's very difficult to be in the middle ground. And I think ultimately they'll write it off as a bad 70 minutes, kind of count the bruises and see how everybody is going into Wednesday. But they've got a couple of days training to kind of get it out of the system and go again. Because Palace looked, admittedly, they were playing against Everton, who did a proper Everton job this afternoon. They were largely awful, as they are prone to doing immediately after having quite a good result. And Palace look an energetic team, at least, even when they're not necessarily playing well. There's an energy about them, and I think that's the area we've got to be slightly concerned with going into Wednesday, I think.
Jack, who's watching on Facebook, says that Teller needs more power behind his shots, because it's easy meat for a keeper. Yes. At the moment. Yeah. Is that something that will come with age, do you think, Glenn?
We've got to remember, Teller's not 18. He's 23. It just seems like his shooting technique, he never seems to catch the ball cleanly.
Yeah, it's a technique thing where exactly on the foot he's actually making contact with the ball.
Yeah, it just seems to drag everything, you know, along the ground. And but if he shoots from further out than, you know, edge of the penalty area, it doesn't seem to carry enough power to be. This is what I mean about the, you know, the efforts we had yesterday. I mean, he had a couple where he placed them quite well, but they just didn't have enough behind them. And any Premier League goalkeeper is going to save that.
Yeah.
So yeah, he does that. You know, that's what the training ground's for, isn't it? And you'd think there'd be someone looking at them, you know, looking at the mechanics of how he shoots and trying to improve that, because he's not going to score from further out than 10 yards the way he shoots at the moment. And it's not just a case of, I mean, like someone like Adam Armstrong does drag a shot occasionally, but you know, he can really belt a ball if he gets it right. But I don't think I've seen, you know, Teller really whip one in from the edge of the box, and you think it's got a decent chance. It always seems to be like a back pass. So that's something he's got to work on, and that's what training's for.
Well, 16th in the league, 16 points, 16 games played, a point a game, which is going to be all right come the end of the year, isn't it, Steve? You know, 38 points would be unlucky. Have we been unlucky? Should we be on more points?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I mean, you look back at, I mean, even the games last week. I mean, that Brighton game we should have had wrapped up easily. And I mean, there are a whole list of games that you can go back through and say, well, we definitely should have won that. Individual mistakes have cost us, but at the end of the day, we have players that will make individual mistakes because that's our level. But there are a lot worse teams than us, I think. I mean, Newcastle managed to go back to good old Steve Bruce Day, Newcastle, this afternoon. So that was fun. That was fun to see that Eddie Howe isn't the Messiah after all.
That game can't come quick enough, can it?
yeah. Particularly before they get to spend $20 million on buying Steve Cook from Bournemouth. I saw was the latest link yesterday, which I thought was absolutely extraordinary that they've got all this money and they're going to go for a guy that's realistically is too slow to be playing in the Championship. But yeah. As I say, I think there's enough teams that are worse than us. And while the ownership situation and therefore the financial situation is still a little bit in flux, I think we're in a little bit of a holding pattern, and you've kind of just got to take what you can get at this stage. I think the three that are in the bottom three, obviously Newcastle's a little bit of an asterisk with their situation. Leeds look pretty, I mean, they seem to play quite well at Chelsea yesterday, but overall they've been pretty poor this season. And again, they've picked up key injuries again. And yeah, I mean, there's plenty of teams that I don't really see an awful lot from. Brentford were largely rubbish for most of their game on Friday night, but Watford basically did a Saints and just dropped deeper and deeper until eventually Brentford had to score because they were almost defending on the goal line for the last 15 minutes. But Brentford have been on the slide for a while, and I think that's the sort of game on Saturday that you've got to be looking to win that.
And Dan, should we treat this like the Liverpool game where you say, actually, we were never really going to get anything out of it, and so we put it behind us and then we focus on the next one? Because people are going to start quoting statistics and looking at the bigger picture and going, well, actually, you know, things aren't going too well. But do we just need to keep it in the context of what it is and the fact that we don't often pick up points at the Emirates?
I don't think you can put it in the same bracket as the Liverpool game, because Liverpool are a far better side than Arsenal are. I mean, no, not many teams are going to go to Liverpool and have much luck there. But teams will go to the Emirates and, you know, beat Arsenal. So, no, I wouldn't personally put it in the same bracket as the defeat to Liverpool. You can look at it and say, yeah, you know, they haven't won there in 20 plus games and history is just kind of repeating itself. I think had they been at the game yesterday, even after kind of like 5 minutes, the crowd were on Arsenal's back. And I think had Southampton scored, they very easily could have had another one. And then I think Arsenal would have just buried themselves into a hole, because that place would have just turned on them in a big way. So no, I actually thought it was a game, although I predicted they would lose, I actually thought after watching the first 10 minutes, knowing that Arsenal, you know, the chances were Saints would miss all their chances and Arsenal would score, I felt quite confident that Saints might be able to get a point here or a win. But no, I don't put it in the same bracket as Liverpool. Others might, but no, I don't.
Glenn, Jason asks the $6 million question, where are we going to score our goals from?
Good question. I mean, we're going to talk about the Palace game, and as far as we know,
who might start? Yeah,
all three of the regular strikers are injured, and you know what that means. Yeah, yeah, it means Walcott or Shane Long. I mean, unless they play Teller and Redmond up front, so that's an interesting one. So there's going to be a lot of very stressed medical staff at Saints over the next 3 days to try and get, you know, one or two of the strikers up and running, because I mean you can never tell. Well, maybe Shane Long will come in, score 5 goals, get another contract for another 2 years. Who knows? But strange things have happened, and that's what happened a couple of years ago. So history might repeat itself. But
do we know any more about the injuries, Dan? Do we know any more about? Obviously, Adams wasn't in the squad yesterday, which was a surprise.
No. So Ralph, after the game, didn't know to what extent the issues were with Brozier and Armstrong and with Jay Adams. All he said was that the medical staff have told him that it's a very strange hamstring injury, and it's not one that they've really seen. So in terms of them advising him, there wasn't too much, in Ralph's words, that, you know, they knew about it. So I mean, if it's hamstring, you're never kind of confident that it's a quick thing. But then again, we didn't get any kind of detail from Ralph on it, so it could be strange in the sense that they don't really know what it is, but it's okay, or it's strange that they've never seen it before and it could be really bad. Of course, I think everyone at Saints will be, you know, having their fingers and toes crossed that all three will be fine. But then on the flip side, you know, we've all been complaining that they've not scored enough goals. So, you know, is it much worse?
Shane Long and Walcott up front?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying for 1 minute I think it will help Southampton if their three first-team strikers are out, but, you know, we said they're not scoring goals, so can Walcott do it? Can Long do it?
We had a little glimpse of Adams and Brozier playing up front, didn't we? And that, you know, that looked like a way forward to me. So it's a shame that, you know, certainly Adams was in a fairly decent run of form, and it's a shame that he's picked up a knock. But
someone's got to step up. So
yeah, what's that? What's the anyone know anything about Stuart Armstrong? Because he gets forgotten about now, and he's still a massive loss creatively with regards to us creating goals and scoring goals.
Still no wins without him.
It's getting like David David Connolly, isn't it? Like he's back from the dead. Yeah.
Ralph was asked about that this week, wasn't he, Dan? And he said it's just a calf injury and nothing suspicious at all, I think was what
always
he said.
Always a calf injury.
Yeah, as we say. Yeah, always a calf. So Palace on Wednesday night is not going to be an easy one. How do we go about getting something out of that, Steve?
Cut off the supply to Conor Gallagher, by the looks of it. I mean, he's a lad in red hot form at the moment. Two cracking goals today. Yeah, I think the central midfield is going to be important, but also our fullbacks. Zaha's had a relatively quiet season, but they've got options in those areas now. Whereas before, kind of everything had to go through him. They've made some astute signings and got some alternative options that mean that teams can't just double up on him now. And basically, if you shut Zaha down, you shut Palace down. That's not the case anymore. So got to be a little bit careful there. But I think their defence is there to be got at. I mean, Joel Ward and players like that getting into a Premier League back four these days, not having that. He's got to be running at their fullbacks if in an attacking sense, I think. But yeah, I think if we can shut down the supply line, sort of in sort of that between area, sort of between the centre circle and our penalty area, then I think that's the key. That's the key to winning the game Wednesday, I think.
Does it all hinge on who comes back in, Glenn? Those that were missing on Saturday.
Well, Romeo and Salah will be back in, won't they? Like, it's only a one game ban, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, so as long as they haven't got an injury we don't know about, those two will come in, which will immediately make us a lot more competitive. You know, we'll have a couple of tough guys back in the team who just won't allow the game to pass us by. Because if those two were missing, I would fear us against Palace, because they're always fear for us against Palace, rather, because they are always quite a physical side. And, you know, if you don't fight that, then the game just drifts away from you. Steve's made a very important point about Zaha not being their only option now. They've got Benteke back playing, and he's doing okay. So he's a big physical centre forward. So we have got to choose the centre backs carefully. You know, obviously Salisu will come back in. Personally, I'd go with Salisu and Lianco for that game. But whether he will or not, whether he still sees Lianco as like the fourth choice and will only play him in an emergency, remains to be seen. But personally, that's what I'd look at doing. It is hard to see us scoring, and it just depends, you know, especially if the players are out that we've mentioned. If Brozier, Adams and Armstrong are all out, then we are in a spot of bother. But if we can get one or two of them on the pitch, then hopefully we can. I see it being quite a low scoring game, because I don't think Palace don't score many goals. All right, they've got three today because of Everton, but they're not the most prolific of teams. So it'll be a tight game.
Get your money on 4-4 then.
Well, we have to defend properly. You know, we've won three games this year, and they've all been 1-0, and they've all been games where we've defended properly. We're not going to blast teams away. You know, we've got to accept that. No matter who plays, we're not going to be 3-0 up. Yeah. We have to keep things tight. And, you know, I saw someone, I think it was in the Echo, someone questioned, you know, the amount of goals we've started letting in the last three or four games. It's suddenly the average is, you know, going up. And we can't be not clicking in both penalty areas. I mean, that was the thing I noticed from yesterday. We were poor in both penalty areas, and you ain't going to win any games if you've got that particular double whammy going on.
Yeah. Well, so it won't come as a surprise to any regular listeners or viewers that none of us got the score prediction right last week. We had a 2-1, a couple of 2-0s and a 3-1. So we were there or thereabouts. I think we all got the outcome right. Crystal Palace on Wednesday night. Dan, how do you see this one going?
It could be a cagey game. I don't know. I generally can't call it, to be honest. 1-1.
1-1. Steve?
God, yeah,
it's getting like that now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I might start drawing my predictions out of a tombola or something. 1-0 win, just all pure. Right. Oh God, that'll be horrible. But yeah, just get something on the board.
Ben, give us something.
I'm going to cover all bases. So Dan's gone for a draw. Steve's gone for a win. I'm going to go for a 1-0 defeat.
Right. Okay. Well, we shall
see. How optimistic is that?
I know, right? Well, we follow it up with Brentford at home on Saturday. That's not going to be an easy one either, Glenn, because they're doing all right this season.
Yeah, they started off well. They're actually not playing particularly well at the moment, but they're picking up the odd result, you know, like they did at the weekend, and they're keeping their heads above water. I still expect them, to be honest, to be nearer the bottom three than mid-table come the end of the season. Mm. But they're doing okay. I like the manager. He's a refreshing kind of guy. Seems to he has a certain vibrancy about him, and that's reflected in the team. You know, they're loving life at the moment, and you can tell that from the way they play. That said, we have to win games like this.
Yeah, definitely.
We absolutely have to win games like this at home against Brentford, with all due respect. And I expect us to do so. You know, they are the sort of team that are going to have bad games, but occasionally, and we have to make sure they have one next Saturday.
So your score prediction for that game?
I'm going to go for a 2-0 win on that one.
Okay. Steve, are the floodgates going to open? Well, it depends who starts, I guess, but...
Floodgates might open in terms of in terms of points, but not necessarily goals, because I mean, we're winning games 1-0, aren't we? I mean, I think Brentford, actually, their style might suit us in that they're a little bit more open. They're not the sort of side that are happy to defend on their 18-yard box, stick 11 men behind the ball and just see what happens. They're a side that wants to play a fairly progressive style, and hopefully the situation arises where ultimately we just have slightly better players at doing the same thing. Mm. And if that's the case, then we should win the game. Yeah, I mean, Brentford, they look quite entertaining. There's certainly good atmospheric games at their ground, but on the road they've looked a little bit ropey, I think. So yeah, I mean,
what score are you going for?
Nice early Christmas present for everyone. A nice another nervy 1-0 win.
No win. And finally, Dad, you see this one playing out?
2-1 Southampton.
2-1 Southampton. All right, we'll take that. That's about it for episode 179. So my thanks as always to Steve, to Glenn and to Dan. Thanks also to all our patrons. We've got the Matt Letizier tier patrons. That's Colt Baker, Dave Ernsberger, Ed Busy and Phil Cook, plus Nick Reed, who's in our Francis Benali tier. You can find out more about becoming a TSP patron and all the benefits that come with that over on the website. So do search that out. And don't forget to follow this podcast wherever you're listening. On the socials, we're at Total Saints Pod. That's on Twitter and on Facebook. And you can always get in touch via the website as well.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching, and have a great week.